Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Knowledge Fight. I am Dan.
I'm Jordan.
We're a couple dudes like to sit around, drink novelty beverages, and talk a wee bit about Alex Jones.
Oh, indeed we are, Dan.
Yes,
Dan?
Hey, buddy.
When was the last time you got us some sweet new chairs?
I just did. Well, actually, thank you to my parents for a Christmas present. They sent me a couple of new office chairs. Spoiler alert, our old ones that we were using were a disaster. I'd had for probably 7 to 8 years. The cat scratched them to shit. They were just falling apart.
Yeah,
yours didn't lean back. It was horrible.
I would go home covered in little bits of the
black,
leather. Yeah,
lining of the chair. Yeah,
yeah,
it was horrible.
Yeah.
But we're now entering a new phase, and 2019 will be the year of the new chairs.
Indeed. Hell yeah.
Which is a bizarre thing to be celebrating, but we do. So this is a podcast where I know a lot about Alex Jones.
And chairs, and I don't know anything but what you tell me about both.
Indeed, and that is the fun of this here show. Jordan, today we've got a fun episode in front of us. We are talking about Alex Jones's Christmas Eve Spectacular 2018.
Nope. What is this, a Bill Murray Christmas all over again? Hell no.
Alex took Christmas off.
Of course. Well, good for him.
Did a rebroadcast on Christmas.
He believes in the Lord.
David Knight filled in on Wednesday, and then on Thursday.
Of course he did. He doesn't have anywhere to go.
No. Owen Schroyer, I think, did Thursday, and then Alex is due back in studio on Friday when this episode will come out. But, of course, we won't be able to have listened to it by the time our podcast comes out. So what we have is Christmas Eve, and Alex Jones is a weirdo. On Christmas Eve,
yeah,
which
of course,
is to be expected.
Yeah.
You know who's now a weirdo?
Our new donors.
Yes, that's
Hell
correct.
Yeah.
I'd like to take a minute before we start the show to give a couple thank yous out there to folks who have signed up and are supporting the show. First of all, I'd like to say, Alex, not Alex Jones, but Alex, you are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Alex.
Thank you very much, Alex.
Second, I'd like to say thank you to Tommy. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Tommy.
Thank you very much. It's finally time for Tommy Robinson to really start donating.
Yeah,
to
try
to
make good.
Yeah. He needs to support the fight against him.
Against himself, yeah. Next, I'd like to say thank you to Brian. You are now a policy wonk.
I'm a policy wonk.
Thank you, Brian.
Very much, Brian.
Lastly, I'd like to say thank you to somebody who has joined on a little bit of a higher level, but also would like to give a special thank you and shout out to her. She sent a little tip through PayPal, and I forgot to send an email thanking her, so I will do that right now. So thank you very much, Christy. You are now a technocrat.
I'm a policy wonk.
4 stars. Go home to your mother and tell her you're brilliant.
Someone sodomite sent me a bucket of poop.
Daddy Shark. Bom, 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 bom. Jar Jar Binks has a Caribbean black accent.
He's a loser little titty baby.
I don't want to hate black people. I renounce Jesus Christ.
Thank you so much, Christy.
Thank you very much, Christy.
If you would like to become a policy wonk out there and, you know, support the show, we would appreciate it. You can do that by going to our website, knowledgefight.com, and clicking that button that says support the show.
It would be very kind of you.
Now, bringing up knowledgefight.com, I should tell you, I didn't just get this chair, these two chairs for Christmas.
Uh-huh.
I got another gift that is a gift and a curse and a responsibility. And that is, we received a donation that bumped us over into our next Patreon goal.
Oh, that's dangerous.
Which I have been very vague about for a reason, and that was because I'm terrified to put this out into the world, and now I have to. So, for a long time, people have been requesting that I write a book, or we write a book about Alex Jones.
Yeah.
And I think that there's a good reason for that, and that is, there's not as much utility in this podcast as I would like there to be.
For
the people to get the information that we're putting out into the world, they have to listen to a lot of our podcast in order to get the information.
What? We've done like 250 episodes.
Probably more than that.
We average 2 to 3 hours per episode.
It's not.
There's not that much to listen to.
Sure. It's not the most digestible, usable application or presentation of the information that we're uncovering in the things that we're learning about. And so one of the things people had suggested was that book idea. And I think you and I early on were interested in the idea, but then we sat down and talked about like what that would look like, what the structure of
it. Yeah.
And it just seemed like there wasn't a way to make it an engaging and informative book that wouldn't take us both our entire lives.
Yeah,
or whatever.
Pretty much.
And we would end up probably killing each other because of the meetings about me using the passive voice.
No,
and,
we wouldn't have had a problem because my theory as to if it actually happened, here's how it would have turned out. You would have written a book. And then I would scribble in screams in the margins. Yeah.
It actually might have been if we'd come up with that a long time ago, that might have been the way to go. But so I kicked around the idea of like, what other ways would there be to, present the information in a way that people could use? Like, let's say you're having an argument with somebody about X, Y, or Z thing, some conservative, narrative and shit online. It's harder to point them to, oh, here's what this is. Listen to 45 minutes of this podcast and then you'll get to the debunking of X, Y, or Z thing.
It's pretty fun.
Sure. And hopefully maybe we'll get a new listener out of it.
Yeah,
but
well.
it's not the most helpful. And so what I decided to do is I decided to start building a wiki. But then I started to do that and I realized I don't like the wiki structure necessarily. I find it very difficult to manage and it's unwieldy. But I've begun and done most of, not most of, it, the work is never going to be done. But I've created a database, more or less, of InfoWars information. It's a work in progress, but because we've crossed this goal, I will start posting it. I'll start making it available on knowledgefight.com. I hope by the first of the year. My goal is the first of the year it'll go live. That's sort of the time frame of lead up that I probably need to brush up a few things, polish some edges and what have you.
Oh yeah.
But there will be a link on knowledgefight.com that will go to our tons of information.
Well, I am.
I spent a large portion of my time over Christmas compiling and writing a bunch of this stuff up, and I'm very excited to have people see it. But I'm also terrified.
I am grateful to all of the policy wonks who got us to this level, mainly because Dan has been writing this shit for forever, and if you hadn't forced him to put it out, I don't think he ever would have until he was like 95.
Probably.
I mean, speaking directly to the policy wonks, of course. I'm not talking to you, otherwise I would
right. I think you're probably fairly right. I would kick the can down the road and be like, well, there's just a little bit more there's I need
no,
to
no,
do.
No, you I know, could put a little bit more in right. there. No, no, no.
So it'll be incomplete from the jump, for sure. And a lot of it will end up focusing on guests, narratives, information, and those sorts of things
right.
that are more germane to the times that we've studied, like 2009 and 2015, and the Trump, coming to Trump era.
Yeah.
That sort of thing. There's going to be a lot more of that, but it won't only be that. And as time goes on, I'm going to continue to add to, these databases and stuff like that. And hopefully in time, it will be a much more thorough,
It's incomplete
whatever.
The way the Smithsonian Institute is incomplete. You can't have every fucking thing in there.
That's an unfair comparison, but I appreciate what you're saying.
Ah, shut up.
Anyway, that will be coming. So thank you to everybody who's donated to the show and supported us and forced my hand on this. It's, we will see. But that is to come. What is to come today?
Ah!
Christmas Eve.
Hey, there we go.
So Alex is in studio. He's in a bit of a weird mood. And I have this first clip I'm going to play is a little bit long because.
Is it him reenacting the entire Christmas story?
It's him
Christmas
singing
story?
The first Noel. The first Noel.
I would watch a InfoWars nativity play all day.
Well, see, here's the thing, Jordan. A bunch of people, it's not fair to say a bunch, but. I got some field reports from people that they had sightings of Alex on the ground in Tulsa.
Boots on the ground in Tulsa?
Boots on the ground in Tulsa.
I thought GW wasn't going to do that.
Everyone was like, what the fuck is Alex Jones doing in Tulsa?
Good question.
Turns out he explains here in this first clip and then tells a meandering, bizarre story that I cannot believe is true about going to see a movie with his wife's family.
Okay. When I tell stories like this, I don't do it to brag. I do it to give the listeners and viewers all across the U.S. and all across the world the positive news.
That means he's about to brag.
No. When I see negative stuff, I tell you about it. When I see positive things, I talk about it. I went up to Omaha, Nebraska to spend the last few days with my...
I said Tulsa. I'm sorry.
You meant Omaha, Nebraska.
I apologize.
Okay, I gotcha.
Wife's my second wife, my real wife, my awesome wife's father, who's had some heart problems and things. So she was up there taking him to clinics and hospitals and things. And at the same time, visiting time with her father. So I had a lot of time kind of by myself to poke around the real Rust Belt. And it's still a beautiful city in many ways. Omaha, Nebraska.
Is it?
And then my wife hadn't seen the mule. I had seen it with some friends about a week and a half ago. So I said, let's take your dad to a movie.
So we got to pause already. First of all, Omaha is a fine town. I've been there. It's a nice place. Second of all, Alex is like, I'm so busy fighting the info war, I'm going to see the mule a second time.
Yeah.
Okay. All right.
What? It's directed by Clint Eastwood. I assume it's about the main villain of Second Foundation by Asimov. What don't you like?
I'm just saying, if you have time to go see a movie twice, you've got some leisure in your life. That's all I'm saying.
All right.
So we got him there and got him out of the car and, you know, got him in the movie because he has trouble walking. And
I've been poisoning him for...
I'd already seen the movie. And, well, you know, we'd eaten dinner way early. I wanted a hot dog and some nachos. So I go out there at like 8 o'clock at night.
Okay.
We'd eaten at about 5.
Yeah.
And I get the fast food and I get the hot dog and I get the nachos. And all of a sudden, everybody behind the counter wants to take pictures and shake my hand. And the manager comes out. Now, by the time I do that, more people come. And I'm like, okay, that's like 20 people. Everyone that comes in here, because it wasn't that busy.
It's called
everybody was in the movies. It was in between, you know, the films letting out. And I'm like, I got to get out of here. I got to get back to the movie. My wife's going to wonder where I am. I've been out here 20 minutes.
The story is long.
I'm trying to eat the nachos while I'm shaking hands and they're taking photos. More people come up. It's almost everyone. So I probably take 25, 30 photographs, sign autographs. They're pulling out Gadsden flags out of the back of the movie theater.
They got Gadsden flags.
It's the big fancy mega mall they built there. It's all real modern.
Like the Gadsden flag. It's very modern.
The nicest theater in Omaha. So I go back in. My wife's like, where have you been? I go, I got mobbed outside. We go out.
Why do you smell like
alcohol? 20 minutes later at the end of the movie.
I didn't tell that part of the story.
And there are 50 people or more. Mainly Generation Z high school men and women. Young people, young adults. And it's just crazy. And we're like, hey, I got to get her dad outside. And as we go outside, I'm walking through the night and more people are running in saying, Alex Jones, Alex Jones, Alex Jones. I was flash mobbed. And people say, well, why didn't you videotape it?
That's a good question.
You're trying to hide.
Alex,
and
that's a good
like,
question.
Oh, I'm a celebrity. Leave me alone. The good news is I got flash mobbed in Omaha, Nebraska, in the middle of nowhere, just trying to get a hot dog and cheese nachos.
That's not the middle of nowhere, but.
Oh, Omaha, Nebraska?
Yeah, it's not.
A real city?
Yeah. I just contest every detail of that story except for that her dad probably has mobility problems. That's the only thing. That's the only part of that story that I'm like, yeah, all right, I'm going to go ahead.
All I thought was Improv Everywhere's reach has gotten too far.
Yeah,
they're
in Omaha.
They're literally everywhere nowhere. Now. Yeah.
I don't know. First of all, I would say, Alex, hot dogs or nachos. That's what I would say, first of all. You don't need both. You already said you had dinner 3 hours earlier. You don't need to go to the goddamn concession stand. By the way, not fast food. That is a movie theater hot dog.
That was a movie theater
that
hot dog.
That is just above gas station hot
Ooh,
dog.
Oh, boy, that's not good.
I worked at a movie theater for 5 years. I have a lot of expertise in this world.
Yeah.
I also just don't believe any of this stuff. This is just another one of his, I'm so popular.
Yeah, I don't know why it is that he is telling this story. Other than to, like, preemptively make sure his wife thinks that he wasn't going to the bar. Yeah.
He wasn't drinking by a dumpster.
Yeah, come on.
I would say that it's fascinating to me how, depending on what narrative and what sort of feeling he needs his audience to have, he will tell almost identical stories as that. Like, I went out in public and everyone mobbed me.
Yeah.
And it'll either be they loved him or they were spitting at him and calling him a Russian.
Of course.
Depending on whatever he needs, tons of people talk to him all the time. But they're either angry at him or love him, depending on if he needs to inspire hope or fear.
It's almost like he has these paranoid projections that are dependent on how he's feeling at the time. Like, he's feeling good. He's with his family. They're enjoying Christmas. So all of a sudden, there are so many people surrounding him, and they're giving him nothing but love.
Ooh.
Or if he's feeling bad, like, for instance, he just met with his lawyer, all of a sudden he's going to get mobbed by all of these evil people
these
who are
leftists
spitting on him.
Worship
the
Satan.
Devil. It could just be that they're all in his head.
I think your paranoid projection theory might be right, because he's not done talking about
how
this.
How is he not done?
And in this next clip, he says things that I think are even less likely than that first one.
So there was hysteria. Like Elvis Presley was there or something. Now, again, I'm not building myself up.
You
forget me.
More than 50
they people. Just see InfoWars as a symbol of standing up to the globalists. And let me tell you, our flight back, because of flight cancellations and things, we had to go through Denver and then come back. So it took me all day yesterday to get home. So, you know, 2-hour flight. It was like a 10-hour fiasco. In the Denver International Airport.
Oh, we're not talking about the horse, are we?
Appreciate you.
Okay,
keep it up. Keep it up. Everywhere. I mean, I'm talking like every second person, black, white, Hispanic, old, young, foreigners, you name it. So the good news to all the listeners and viewers is, I don't know what zeitgeist we've hit or what's going on. Oh, another thing, people kept saying, Merry Christmas. And I'd say, and they'd wink at me. The flight attendants, the pilots,
I'd
take a hidden camera with me and go out in public now and just show this, because this is what scares the hell out of the globalists, because I'm only a focal point. I'm a symbol of the liberty movement that they've tried to suppress and demonize and destroy. But people know the globalists are such liars that then it makes them embrace us even more. It's insane.
That is insane.
That's insane.
So the notion that he's walking around the Denver International Airport and people are, it's like Fight Club, he says, and that people are walking up to him and sort of like under their breath, and like, keep it up. That I think he's probably imagining some of that.
Maybe
one guy was too shy to say hello and muttered something to him, and then he expanded. Also, by the way, having people say Merry Christmas to you when they are in the service industry is not surprising. The idea that stewardesses or even the pilot, because when you're coming on the plane, they have the cockpit door open.
And sometimes
the pilots will wave at you and stuff.
Yeah.
The idea that they're saying a seasonal greeting is not like proof that InfoWars is so powerful.
No, they're winking at him too. That means that they know the code, Dan.
There's also a flirtatious streak in stewardesses, I think.
I found
that to be the case anyway.
It's fun that his white supremacist code is very easy to break.
Mm.
That is not the wind talkers that we're dealing with here. Your code for being cool is like Merry Christmas, bro. You got me. All right.
See that? See my eye?
And the rest of the world is like, sure, fine, whatever. We're bored with you.
So, Alex, but you may be bored. The rest of the world is enthralled. It's Beatlemania.
Oh, that's true.
At the airport.
Yes.
And in
better than Elvis.
In Omaha, somewhere right in middle America, as the Counting Crows would.
The real America, Dan.
Yeah. So that's all good and well. But while Alex was out of town, something happened to his car that has led him to be in a very weird mood here on Christmas Eve.
I was driving into work, and somebody must have been driving my car while I was gone, because it was on NPR.
Who would have been driving
what?
Your car? Your kids are not old enough to drive. Your wife was with you. Your real wife was with you. Was Buckley driving your car?
Who else has keys to your car? Who could be driving this car?
Does Rob Dew have keys to your
this
car?
This is a serious mystery. I need to get to the bottom
of it. Someone carjacked me and then left my car where I found it, but there was one thing changed.
And two songs in a row were anti-war Christmas songs. War's over if you want it, jingle bells. And I thought, you know, there's the left. They're against war. They hate Trump for pulling out of these murderous wars.
War.
And there he is with criminal justice reform that the Democrats put in to give blacks three times the sentences. And then Trump fixes it. They're like, shut up, you Nazi. Don't let the blacks out of jail.
So that's a little all over the place, but, you know, someone stole his car and put it on NPR, and then when he got it back in his car, apparently that John Lennon song, Happy Christmas War is Over.
Yeah.
And now he's furious about it, because these leftists, they are supposed to hate war, but Trump stopped the war. He stopped war.
Furthermore, Here's my issue with this whole bullshit story. Hold on. Somebody just snuck NPR onto your car while you were gone. Somebody else was driving it. And you get in there being Alex Jones, and you notice immediately NPR is on. And then you listen to a couple of songs. Man, come on. I'm Alex Jones. I'm still going to see what NPR has got to play.
I mean, you'd have to assume that means that NPR has shifted to a FM format and are just playing Christmas songs in a block as opposed to it being like interstitial
music. This
American
Life, yeah.
Or All Things Considered, playing a little Lennon in there.
It was just Ezra Koenig singing the song.
Yeah. So we'll get into the war thing here in a minute, because that's nonsense. But you were particularly confused by this criminal justice reform thing.
So if I understand correctly, Alex's take on the criminal justice reform bill that passed
the
through
First
Congress
Step Act
was that
Trump did it.
The Democrats put all this language in there that specifically said we're going to keep black people specifically in jail for three times as long as they were before.
He was saying that that was the way it was before.
Right.
And
that's
Trump
what the Democrats, that's what the Democrats
did.
And then Trump fixed it
by
using his incredible power to understand legislative language
and
right?
to make the First Step Act happen.
Oh, absolutely.
So while it's absolutely a good thing that bipartisan legislation passed Congress that would work to ease mandatory minimum sentences and work harder on rehabilitation of offenders instead of punishing them, it's absolutely absurd to give Trump any credit for the First Step Act.
I think he did it.
For one thing, a ton of the things contained in the bill are things that leftists have been pushing for a long time. And actually, in many ways, this is just an extension of things that have been in the works since Obama's term. From an article in McClatchy, quote, "The new law, called the First Step Act, retroactively applies changes Congress made to drug sentencing laws in 2010, which experts say will allow between 4,000 and 6,000 current prisoners to immediately qualify for supervised release programs." That is to say that in 2010, there was a bill passed that sought to undo the damage that was done by the varying sentences for, like, crack and cocaine.
Right.
That sort of thing.
Varying racist sentences for crack and cocaine.
Under Obama in 2010, that was passed. What this bill does, the First Step Act that is really good, is it makes them retroactive.
Right.
So that is a very positive thing, but it's really just an extension of something that has already been in the works long before Trump, and people have been on the left have been pushing for quite a while. The reason for the varying sentences for coke and crack goes back to the Anti-Drug Abuse Act of 1986, signed into law by Reagan after being passed overwhelmingly by the bipartisan effort. It was like 90% of both the House and Senate.
Yeah, that's
whenever very few people were against it.
There were also way more white people in the House and Senate at the time, and the TV news was hamming up this crack, the new epidemic taking over the inner cities.
You can't,
definitely not regular folk like you and me, the inner cities.
You can't say that that was a Republican or Democrat initiative in as much as both houses of Congress voted overwhelmingly for it regardless of party. It's a shame of both parties, frankly. So this bill, one of the things that's been touted as one of the bill's really positive things is that it bans the shackling of pregnant prisoners. But that was a practice that has already been banned by the Bureau of Prisons in 2008.
That really shouldn't have been anything.
Shouldn't have been a conversation.
There should not have been. I read that in the bill and I'm like, whoa, hold on. That wasn't already taken care of, at the dawn of humanity?
It was by the Bureau of Prisons in 2008. It's more fucked up to realize that it wasn't in 2007.
Right.
But it's who knows how well, I bet they weren't doing a great job of following the BOP guidelines or anything like that. And it's good to put that into law, but
The Boy Scouts had condoms at their parties before we stopped shackling pregnant women.
Yeah. It is good, but it's also not nearly enough, this bill. The act only relates to federal prisoners and does literally nothing to fix the wrongful incarceration / enslavement of far, far more people locked up in state prisons. Of the estimated 2.3 million prisoners there are in this country, only approximately 180,000 are in federal prisons, over two-thirds of whom are not even eligible for this program, which makes the act seem possibly kind of just like lip service to the private prison industry. All in all, this was a bill that enjoyed largely bipartisan support that Trump did nothing to make happen. If anything, the argument should be that Jared Kushner pushed for it. So if Alex wants to praise someone, that's his guy. The reality is that Trump saw an opportunity to attach himself to something that was universally popular, cost him nothing, and he could use to his advantage, so he did just that. Now, further, Alex should not be in favor of the First Step Act based on his principles. For one, it excludes offenders who used firearms in committing of their offenses. He should believe that this is an unfair demonization of gun owners.
Firearms. It's the libs. They're trying to keep our guns in jail.
If you were caught selling crack and you had a gun, you're not eligible for the benefits that will come from the First Step Act.
That's kind of rude.
Sure, but Alex should be super against that.
Absolutely.
Plus, the Congressional Budget Office estimates that the plan will cost taxpayers $346 million over the next 10 years because the released people will be eligible for benefits like SNAP and insurance assistance. If Obama did something like this, it would be proof of a globalist plot against good, hard-working white citizens, an attempt to flood the streets with criminals in order to set off social unrest and bring in FEMA camps. It's all nonsense.
I think he's applying a double standard
here. It feels that way.
I think he might be applying a double standard.
Now, the issue, I'm bringing that up because that's the way Alex's rhetoric generally works.
Yeah.
Obviously, the amount you'll save in not incarcerating these people makes up for the $346 million.
Of course.
But Alex is a propagandist. He would use that number against Obama if he had a fucking chance
immediately,
to.
Immediately. Instantly.
Yeah. So, anyway.
He would say, actually, he wouldn't use that number. That number is too small. He would say, it's going to cost the taxpayers billions upon billions of dollars a year, and that's without knowing that there are rapists and murderers in your community.
And somehow the Federal Reserve is to blame or some shit. Who knows?
Actually, that is true.
Who knows? So this is all nonsense. He spends a large portion of the show trying to give Trump credit for this and being like, he's the best. He, you know, even if you're a liberal, you gotta love that he did this. I'm like, well, he did sign it. Yeah. But what's he gonna do? Veto that?
Yeah. Like, that'd be pretty funny.
Is that what you're gonna do? He should, based on his beliefs too, based on his track record about law and order. And
yeah.
All that stuff Trump should absolutely.
He doesn't want to appear soft on innocent people being in jail.
He never has.
Yeah. He's never done that. He's always been hard on innocent people. Sure. They're innocent. Anyways, we need to give the Central Park Five the death penalty. Yeah. I know you say they're innocent because of evidence and I'm a big racist, but we don't want to appear weak on the innocent.
That'd be strong. So all that's a hot load of bullshit. And Alex, I mean, it's one of those things. It's like, I hate the way he's lying, but at least he's lying about something that's mostly positive.
Yeah.
I don't know. He is also trying to present the idea that, like, Democrats are against the plan, or they have been against it.
Yeah, I don't understand why.
Well, we'll get into that later, but it's incredibly infuriating for when you look at the reality. But Alex loves Trump. He's not gotten off the train.
Yeah.
He's still on board real hard. And in this next clip, it turns out he also loves Trump's daddy.
Yeah, my reputation is amazing because I come from the exact same people. Pro-America, anti-communist, that discovered the globalist plan more than 50 years ago, like Fred Trump. Cool. So I've been in the same operation that's organic from the American people. I'm not part of the very same stay-behind network of Americans to challenge the globalists. And now they are the stay-behind network. Now they are beginning to be removed. Now they're beginning to feel our fingers around their throats. Doesn't matter what knives they shove in our guts, we got good old boy guts. Because by the time our eyes roll back in our heads, our enemy will be dead.
Yes! Merry Christmas.
They can't stand our spirit.
So yeah, that is it is Christmas.
That's a Christmas message.
Absolutely.
And the name of our dear Lord's birthday. I just want to let everybody know, even though we are being stabbed in the good old boy guts,
we will choke the life
with us.
The true message of Christ.
Yeah.
So far we got lying about criminal justice reform, screaming about killing the globalists, and bragging about getting a hot dog in Tulsa.
Yeah.
Omaha. I don't know why I'm mixing up those two.
I don't know either.
I think,
Anyways, this is the Christmas Eve episode, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So,
To be fair, Christmas Eve day?
He hasn't even put the presents under the tree yet.
He's working his way into it, you know? Like, this is where you start, and then you get festive later, maybe?
Yeah, no, maybe he's getting it all out of his system, so when he goes home, he can be like, hey, I'm sorry I've been poisoning your dad for all these years, but also, Merry Christmas, instead of screaming about how the globalists need to have their throats cut.
And he doesn't, that would make for a better celebration, I would say.
I would think so.
So.
With his real wife, of course.
Yeah. This next clip is sort of an extension of that theme, the idea of like, fighting and killing. But.
It's a consistent theme.
Alex makes, he talks about how he's going to defeat the globalists in this next clip, which is nothing new. But then he sort of spells out what comes next, and that also isn't new.
95% of people are gonna die.
No, he has another battle in front of him after the globalists are taken care of.
Facebook.
It's close. He's mentioned this before, but just the way he says it is really funny to me.
And now, your fall forever. It's close. And then we will face the AI and the next levels. You are nothing but a training toy for babies.
Okay.
So prepare to join the ash heap of history with your fallen gods, Hillary Clinton, Baphomet, Satan, and Lucifer.
What about
Because this Christmas, we are going to receive the knowledge of the next level.
Whoa.
All right, let's get serious and get focused here.
Okay.
Whoa, what? No, you can't drop that and then be like, okay, let's move on.
What an asshole.
No! This Christmas, we're going to find out the secrets of the universe. Anyways, we're going to get back to the Syria thing over here. How you guys doing?
Actually, that is what he gets into. It's amazing, your instincts. Would you believe he has a terrible take on the whole thing?
No, he shouldn't even have it. No, he should be 100% for this. I'm going to be very furious. This is his whole thing. This was Trump shoved ISIS up his dirty asshole level when we were in Syria.
Sure.
So getting out of Syria should be a slam dunk.
Oh, no, he's for it. He's for it.
Oh, okay.
But his take on it, it involves some problems.
Oh, okay.
I would say.
And then he actually was honorable and pulled 2,000 troops who were daily truck supplies of food and armaments to the Kurds who were allied with ISIS. And that's it.
What?
You're like, well, what, the Kurds were fighting ISIS years ago. Yeah, but now they're allied with them.
No.
So,
what?
Trump has made the moral and correct high ground decision.
That's absolutely not true. Like, that's absurd. Like, the idea of pulling troops out, generally.
Yeah.
Always I'm going to be in favor of us not having troops places.
Right.
But in the instance like this, you do have to recognize that when you do pull those troops out, what you're doing is creating a power vacuum that is going to lead to possibly the genocide of the Kurds.
No, that's never been tried before.
It's been tried a bunch before.
No, by who?
Where do you want me to start?
Oh, so hold on. So you're saying that by removing a large number of troops really, really quickly, then that could create a power vacuum. Say, let's just take a random year where this could have occurred as a hypothetical.
1991.
I was going to go with 2011.
Okay.
How about 1997, too? Would that one...
We've not done a great job with the Kurds.
No.
And they've generally been a very strong ally of ours.
Yeah.
So the Kurds are not allied with ISIS. And in fact, the same day that Trump announced he was going to abandon the Kurds in northern Syria, ISIS set off a bomb in Raqqa, killing at least one Kurdish fighter. The Kurds are part of the Syrian Democratic Forces, an alliance that fought against ISIS, al-Nusra, and the like, who were supported by Saudi Arabia and Qatar in terms of providing arms. This idea that at some point the Kurds switched alliances to supporting ISIS is patently absurd, because if they did, this conflict, or at least this large aspect of it, would be over. It wouldn't exist.
I don't understand his take at all. Well, like, among all the bad takes that I've read, and this has been, this whole Syrian situation, I wish I had way more of a grasp on it, because
sure.
I've read every possible, like, angle on this.
I know a bit, but at the same time, I recognize that there's so much I even don't understand.
Yeah, I'm going through it, and I'm in this place of like, yes, we shouldn't have troops there. It's an illegal war, obviously.
Yeah.
We should remove troops from that place. Like, the arguments for keeping them there are really, it's a proxy war between us and the Russians.
Uh-huh.
But at the same time, we're also trying to stop genocide, but are we really doing any good at that? Like, Are we a positive force in Syria? Has anybody even asked that?
I think that at the end of the day, some of those questions will be answered by our absence.
Yeah.
Just the answers we may not like to see.
Right.
Or we might not like what we find out whenever right. it goes that way.
Absolutely.
I don't know. Like I said, there are a lot of forces in play in terms of the situation in Syria. I even hazard to say whether I'm for or against the idea of taking troops out.
Exactly.
I can see an argument for, and I can also see a strong argument for to not do it based on the consequences that will come.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So I don't know. It's not a perfect thing, but the idea that Alex is saying that the Kurds are allied with ISIS is absolutely not true. And the idea that he's trying to say that Trump did something honorable and noble
by that's definitely
taking away assistance to the Kurds, it just leaves them sitting ducks to the people who are supported by Saudi Arabia, Qatar, Russia, Assad, like those sorts of people who will, now that the U.S. isn't there as the main ally for the Kurds, will have no incentive not to make massive offensives and slaughter people by possibly the thousands. I mean, it could turn into something really, really awful.
Yeah, and I'm sure that this has, like, him choosing Syria specifically definitely has nothing to do with the interests of foreign powers that he may be interested in. I'm sure he's going to take troops out of Yemen, of course. We're going to stop providing material support there.
No.
We're definitely going to get out of Iraq. I assume we're going to get out of so many of the, like, we have 50 military bases all around the world. Like,
doesn't come up.
I assume that the honorable thing to do would be that. I can't think of any specific reason that Syria would be picked amongst all of these places that we're killing people, Dan.
Well, it's super interesting too, because Alex's conversation of this ends up getting into the idea of, like, now that we're getting gone, you know, they're going to wrap that up real quick. Everything will be fine. And then, much like I told you, during the run up to the 2016 election, the plan will kick into place. Once everything's settled down, Assad is going to step down and hold elections.
Yeah.
So he's still using that narrative as being like, that's what's right in front of us.
Yeah.
Assad is going to allow democracy to thrive and like, Alex, your arguments are based on lies that Steve Pachenik told you.
Yeah.
And now you don't even like Steve Pachenik anymore, but you're still using his narratives. Like, that's so fascinating to me that Alex is like, oh, Steve Pachenik was trying to convince me to say that the Las Vegas shooting didn't happen. He was trying to get me to make that my narrative, but I realize that that's not true and that's not the case. Alex went on air and said that Steve Pachenik is probably still running CIA psyops.
Probably.
But hasn't taken a second to consider what pieces of his worldview were brought to him by Steve Pachenik and questioned those. The idea of the secret counter coup, the idea that that our military, Russia, and Assad were all had a secret agreement that they were going to, everybody's going to be super and
that Obama happy. Wasn't involved with, don't
yeah,
forget.
Yeah, behind Obama's back, that stuff is stuff that Steve told him, and he hasn't taken even a tiny little bit to be like, huh, if he's been lying to me and trying to get me to go down roads he wants me to go down, what about this? Because it would completely destroy his support for Trump.
See, I have no problem with this, because if there's one thing that I have really learned from this podcast, it is that you can never underestimate how lazy Alex really is.
So lazy.
Why would he go back and change anything?
You're talking about Mr. Fake Quote? Mr. Not Fact Check Anything? Alex Jones? Yeah, of course he's super lazy. But I think that there's a nefarious reason behind it too, and that is, like I said, if that domino falls, it calls into question so many of the reasons that he ended up supporting Trump.
Oh, of course.
Like, I don't think he probably would have ended up supporting Trump if he didn't have that fictional mythology of being the mouthpiece of the secret good guys in intelligence counter coup nonsense going on that Steve was telling him about. It allowed him to live in a spy movie that he already believed himself to be living in.
Yeah, that's true.
It's a psyop that Steve ran on him. It verified Alex Jones' own delusions of grandeur.
Nah, come on.
It's crazy.
That's nuts.
But if it comes down to it and there is peace in Syria, which I don't know when that's going to happen. But
I don't know what that would even look
like. But let's assume that it does, and then Assad doesn't step down and have elections. Alex, well, it's never going to come to that, because there will never be a satisfactory peace to where he's like, and now it's time.
Yeah.
Alex.
And if he doesn't, the narrative will just be like, Trump asked him to stay on because he's the strong leader that needs to be in there right now in order to protect the
Well, he was going to step down, but now he's super nationalist.
Yeah,
so we need him there.
So we're adding him to our globalist network of nationalists.
Right. So, I don't know. This is all a lot of nonsense, but it's not nearly as much nonsense as this next clip.
Trump went to Saudi Arabia. He negotiated previously with him over the phone and via letter. And he said, I know you're funding Al-Qaeda and all the other variants.
Of course.
I know you've been working with Western intelligence to do it since the British put you in power almost 100 years ago. He said, if you do it, we're going to overthrow you right now.
Okay.
And they said, right. Oh, no, we'll
stop. Did
he
say that in the letter?
In fact, we'll let women drive cars and go to college and start taking their burkas off. And Trump said, bingo.
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 So to respond to that, they begin flipping out and going crazy all over our news that Trump is the worst person on earth. Because the war's over if you want it to be.
So do you understand the argument that he's making there, basically?
No. No, I think
I feel like you're trolling a little bit.
No. I get what he's trying to say.
That Trump basically brought women driving and the ability to take off your hijab.
Yeah. I think there's a difference between understanding the definitions of the words that he's using and understanding the argument that he's making.
I was
because
more asking
the
about the words.
Silly. Yeah, the words I understand.
Okay.
Yeah.
And you can see why it's nonsense.
What?
See, Donald Trump went to Saudi Arabia on May 20th and 21st, 2017. Here are just some of the things that have happened since then that don't really match up with Alex's stupid narrative. In November 2018, Amnesty International released a report showing that Saudi Arabia, quote, tortured, sexually harassed, and mistreated several human rights activists detained since May of this year.
While they were driving.
The activists were flogged and electrocuted, leading one of them to attempt suicide repeatedly while in custody. In March 2018, Saudi Arabia arrested a number of women's rights activists, some of whom were leading campaigners for the right to drive for women, including Lujain al-Houth Lul and Aziza al-Youssef. In essence, quote, as the Saudi crown prince tours the world presenting himself as a reformer, he is arresting women's rights activists who refuse to accept his tokenism, leaving it to us to make their voices heard, said Kenneth Roth, executive director at Human Rights Watch. In August 2018, Saudi Arabia sought the death penalty in a trial against human rights activist Isra al-Gogham and four associates of hers. The charges they accused her of included, quote, participating in protests, chanting slogans hostile to the regime,
crime,
attempting to inflame public opinion,
crime,
and filming protests and publishing on social media.
Death penalty.
Arrested in December 2015, she was held without access to a lawyer for 32 months. Her most recent trial was scheduled for November 21st of this year, but she wasn't brought to the court, which is also what happened in her October 28th hearing, which has led some international rights organizations to fear for the worst.
Do you mean that she's already dead, a la Khashoggi?
Or just in some sort of terrible way.
Yeah.
They don't want to present her publicly.
Oh, yeah. No, it's one or the other. She's fine.
Well, there's strong fears that that's the case. Mm-hmm. Barring any proof, that's about as best you can say. It seems that way.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. And then as you brought up in August, in August 2018, the Canadian ambassador was expelled from the country after Canada's foreign minister tweeted in support of releasing jailed activists. Then there was the October Saw-related murder of journalist Jamal Khashoggi, the atrocities being committed in Yemen, and the list goes on and on with instances of Saudi Arabia being squarely on the wrong side of human rights issues long after Trump supposedly gave them a stern talking to.
It was actually Saw-3-related, the murdering of Khashoggi.
Nothing that Alex is saying makes any sense, and all he's doing is creating a fictional reality to live in to justify why he used to be critical of Saudi Arabia and now thinks they're the good guys, without having to just admit that he's doing it solely because Trump has said that they're the good guys.
Yeah.
So that's all he's doing. He's just trying to shift his narratives by creating a false reality. And
yep.
It's not true, and the world is suffering because of it.
No. No, it's almost like most of the Republican Party has abandoned every ideal they ever stood for in order to do the politically expedient thing, which is ride the wave of a massive racist.
Alex is literally carrying water for people who are working to kill everybody in Yemen and destroy human rights. It's a mess. But
MBS must have thought it was a brilliant move to be like, hey, I will give all of you the right to drive, just like these activists have said. And secretly, I will kill all of these activists so I never have to worry about activism again, and I'll never have to change anything past that.
I mean, it sends a strong message.
Yeah.
I also don't like calling him MBS because that's the name of a textbook company. There was like a warehouse in Columbia, Missouri, and it was like a cush gig that I could have gotten when I was like 19 or something like that. Uh-huh. Like, I would have been made if I could have gotten in there.
Yeah.
But I failed a drug test, and they didn't hire me. But the funny thing is, I had taken the stuff, you know, it's that stuff that's supposed to flush out your system.
Right.
But it didn't work.
Of course not. And then stuff never does.
When I got my drug test results back, I tested positive for a number of substances I had never taken, which was a little bit scary. Anyway, those memories flood back anytime I hear MBS. So.
I gotcha. I apologize.
How rich I could have been at 19.
Mohammed bin Salman, if I offended you.
So Alex is clearly peddling a self-deluded narrative about Trump and his actions vis-a-vis the Kurds and Saudi Arabia. But it's not him who's been tricked. It's the leftists.
I mean, NPR, CNN, they are like the war party now, right there with the neocons. What a disgusting group of people. But when is the average liberal going to say, I'm not a leftist, and say, my God, Trump is the maverick, he's the liberator, and when are you going to start really appreciating him and admitting you got conned?
Probably not soon, I would say. Trump is the great liberator, and all of you liberals have been conned.
How? I just don't understand it. Like, this is a for real psychotic episode that so much of America is having all at the same time, where up is down and it nothing makes any fucking sense. None of what they're saying makes sense. Like, I just want to have a conversation that makes sense instead of a conversation where it's like, actually, President Alice from Wonderland is doing a great job and everything that she does is fantastic. And how dare you, you evil fucking rabbit? What are you doing with that pocket watch? And not be like, I just think we shouldn't lower taxes for the rich. I don't know what to.
You're a traitor.
Oh, shit.
I don't know.
I want to see an Alice in Wonderland with Alex's voice.
I think a lot of this might come down to the stuff that we focus on so much. I think that perception might be in your head because of so much of the covering the propaganda world. Even though it is so much more mainstream than it used to be and everything, I think that we have maybe a little bit of a skewed opinion of how everyone is conversing.
I guess.
Because we hear so much Alex Jones and,
right,
and that shit.
No, that's reasonable, but the only other explanation then is that so much of the Republican Party is either apathetic to reading any news whatsoever, which, now that I say that, nope, I agree.
To quote, done. To quote Trump talking to Saudi Arabia, bingo.
Yeah. I posed that as a question between two options and then finished the first one. I was like, oh yeah, no, never mind. You're correct. Yep. Moving on.
The Chicagoan who started a question and ended a sentence. It's like that Hugh Grant movie.
Ah.
Boo to Dan.
I was going to let it go.
So Alex is doing some stuff that I would say is evil. Like, I legitimately think the narratives that he's perpetuating and putting out into the world on Christmas Eve, no less.
This is Christmas Eve, right?
Yeah. And I think that I think it's very dangerous. I think it's a really bad, bad thing. I think his behavior is, I think that there's a moral character to it.
Absolutely.
Like, oftentimes I don't really care too much to get into the moral discussion about, like, him lying about the MIAC report or something.
Yeah, that's
like
my
that.
Job.
even if you want to, I'm not super interested in it.
Right, I know.
The morality of lying is not always that, like, that compelling of a conversation. Right. But in this case, I do think that the lies that he's saying are leading to deaths, or at very least normalizing and covering up deaths. And I think that is really bad. I think that's evil, and that makes it all the funnier that in this next clip, Alex talks about how he's incapable of evil.
See, here's the thing. I can think Machiavellian, and I can think treacherous, but then I'm always covering what they're doing. I can't apply it myself. I just can't do it.
That's why I have Roger Stone.
I have limitations. I have blind spots. You could say it's a good thing, but all I've got is straight shooting. And
that's pathological.
These people that they get into lies and manipulation and they don't even know who they are anymore. It's like Louis Gohmert said to the head of Google, he said, you don't even know the light if you saw it. It's like you're a blind man. But see, I can see darkness. I can see evil. But
where?
I can't do it. I don't know how to explain that. And the problem is I can't do evil stuff literally. I mean, I do bad stuff sometimes out of anger and I feel bad about it later, but I can't like launch an evil plan that screws people over and that lies to people and then feel good about it.
I'm starting an MLM.
I don't know how to explain it. It's like I can't even.
I think he's actually being blasphemous right
but
now.
I'm so loyal that I'm disloyal. Does that make sense?
Not at all.
No.
And that's stop. An important thing to quantify and to realize with that because.
What? Newton's?
The hindsight is 2020. All I can say is this. Steve Bannon is so damn bad.
This whole thing.
This is all been about Steve Bannon?
You bet.
What?
Alex is apologizing for ever supporting Steve Bannon.
So this whole, like, I can't do evil speech is in, like, I can't do evil, or at least not like Steve fucking Bannon.
Yep.
That asshole.
The guy who was Trump's campaign manager.
Who I loved forever.
The guy who played an instrumental part in getting Trump elected. The guy who ran the other propaganda outlet that I would report on repeatedly to the point of getting me sued by Hamdi Ulukaya.
Nah, come on.
The guy who now is working to help Jair Bolsonaro, the guy who I say is Brazil's Trump, the guy who is a part of the, well, we would say fascist authoritarian rise around the world that Alex calls the
nationalist
movement around the world. Steve Bannon has a huge part in all that. What the fuck are you doing, Alex? Analyze for a second the things you're doing. It's crazy.
And he can't.
It's crazy.
It is such
a pathetic dum-dum.
And it's just pathological to even consider saying, like, I couldn't do evil.
I'm just not capable of it.
Like, that's really a disease. Like, that is a malignant narcissistic trait.
Oh, yeah.
Like, I can do no wrong. Of course, I do get angry.
Sure.
But I'm going to minimize that.
I do bad things, but I, you know, there is a therapeutic aspect to that. And I think that, you know, oftentimes whenever you're in therapy and you suffer from like guilt and shame excesses in your life and that sort of thing, there is a helpful little trick to being like, I did a bad thing, I'm not bad, that sort of thing.
Yes.
But Alex doesn't deserve that.
No.
He is bad.
Well, even then, you're bad. You're a bad person. You're just not even like morally. You're bad at being a person.
If only because he went to a movie and he got a hot dog and nachos.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
What are you doing?
That's excessive.
Why is it? Why is it that there's so many weird dietary shit that evil Republicans? What do you mean you eat a well done steak? Go to hell
with ketchup.
Yeah,
get out of here. So I don't know. That stuff is just really funny to me. The idea that one thing he's apologizing for is supporting Steve Bannon when everything about him supports Steve Bannon.
Yeah,
can't apologize for other stuff. But yeah.
And that he supports everything that Steve Bannon is doing.
Yeah.
Even though it's so evil.
Yeah. Yeah. Incapable of evil, though.
Incapable of evil.
So now, at this point, Alex goes out to break, and he, so, I don't know, did you play sports growing up?
I did.
Do you have any bosses when you were younger that gave you inspiration, or any coaches that gave you some inspirational advice?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Well, like what?
I don't know,
Your eyes, open hearts can't lose?
No. That guy wasn't real. Was that quote real? Was that like based off of a real thing that guy said?
I mean,
said?
Someone wrote it.
Someone wrote it, obviously.
Mm-hmm.
No, I had a baseball coach my sophomore year who said all kinds of inspirational shit.
Do you remember any of it?
Inspirationally?
Just cliche stuff, probably, right?
No.
A boss who would do the time to lean, time to clean kind of stuff.
No, that's weird and evil. What? Time to lean, time to clean?
My response to that was always, time to lean, time for me to go the fuck home. I'm cutting out on this shift, asshole.
Yeah. No, his shit was always like, work hard. You know, like that kind of thing.
Sure.
Effort overcomes blah.
But yeah, but you'd probably recognize that almost everything that person said is just something that thousands of people have, it's basically from an inspirational poster It's not some sort of
sage. He did say hang in there, kitty, a lot.
Sure. It's exactly that. It's not some sort of like really every coach says the exact same thing.
Yeah. You're a coach. You get the handbook whenever you start being a coach. It's just a long list of cliches.
Yep. So in this next clip, Alex acts like a cliche that a coach told him is some sort of profound advice.
Trump is very fatalistic. He believes if he goes into this, I remember one thing a football coach told me that was the best thing I ever got told.
Poison your father.
It was so important. I wasn't that good of a player. They put me in varsity when I was a freshman after the season. One of three people. And I hated it. I quit. And I was getting run over. It was so painful. But it was because I made some big plays and I hurt people and they liked that.
Whoa. We gotta pause there. You got put up to varsity because you hurt people and they liked that.
Yes.
I understand it's football.
Texas is great.
Look, it's football, but even so, like, you're not supposed to hurt people.
No.
You're supposed to hit people, sure, but there's safe ways to do that and unsafe ways.
Yeah, it's
sounding like possibly Alex played football unsafely.
I played football and I tried very hard not to hurt people.
Right. That's a psychotic impulse.
I hit people.
Yeah.
Because
you're supposed to tackle people.
There's a reason you have pads and all that shit. Yeah. You like hit them with the pads,
The people who would play like high school football and be really excited to try and hurt somebody, that's someone who also may or may not have killed a couple dogs in their life.
Yeah.
That is a lunatic.
Absolutely.
So anyway, the advice.
But this coach told me, he said, you go 110%, you don't get hurt. You go anything less than 100+%, you're going to get hurt. And I learned it's true. You go 100% or you get hurt. And the president is going 110%.
Biggest
he's going to get hurt. He's going to get hurt.
To go 110.
Yeah, he's going to get hurt.
But that, like, go half speed, that's when you get hurt, is like one of the most Bush League. It makes me think he didn't actually play sports, because even if you didn't, you would know that piece of advice.
Yeah, you know how most of the NFL goes half speed all the time? Mm-hmm. That's how they became the professional sports players that they are. That's why, like, there's a 25% massive injury rate all the time.
Totally.
Yeah.
So now, after this, Alex gets weird.
The saying should be, you go 110%, you're going to get CTE. Fucking stop it. Stop it.
Because he believes in you. He's ready to die. He's ready to be killed.
Please.
He's ready to be impeached. He doesn't give a damn. Because he knows in the tarot card deck, there's got to be something called the king. Something called the prince. Something called the hero. There's got to be somebody that doesn't back down. There's got to be somebody that doesn't sell out. There's got to be somebody that isn't a pedophile. There's got to be somebody that loves God. And Trump is that card. InfoWars is that card. You are that card. So get ready for fireworks, because this is it.
There's no pedophile card in the tarot deck.
Is the tarot deck used for playing war?
No.
I don't think so.
I'm not totally sure why Alex Jones would be bringing up tarot cards, something that he specifically thinks is evil in his worldview, and saying that Trump is the king card in it, but oh well. It's only his Christmas Eve episode.
Don't think this is the Christmas Eve episode, Dan. You're fucking with me.
It's the perfect time for him to ramble about how his hero is the assumed top of the esoteric magic devil card game deck. The problem is that the tarot deck doesn't operate the same way a normal deck of cards does, where the highest card is, the higher the card is, the better it is. Also, in normal decks, aces beat kings, so I guess Trump isn't the top in that conception either, but let's not get too far off track. The four suits of the tarot deck, wands, cups, pinnacles or coins, and swords, each represent more or less a different one of the elements. That's generally how most people look at the tarot decks.
Yeah.
And the king of each suit denotes a completely different thing in each suit. Also, a king card being drawn means a completely different thing depending on where the card is drawn in a reading, and if it's drawn upright or reversed. There's a lot of variables in terms of each card.
Nope, the king wins, right? That's the point of the tarot deck.
No.
He beats the ten of spades, at least. Where's the ten of spades in the tarot deck?
There aren't spades. There's like a ten of cups.
Well, then how do you play spades?
You can't. The four suits are each a minor arcana, because they each have identical cards in each suit. So each one is an instance of a minor arcana. If Alex wanted to really make his point, he should have chosen a card from the major arcana, where there's only one individual card of its kind in the deck. For instance, he could have chosen the Emperor, which is described as, quote, "The Emperor represents a powerful leader who demands respect and authority. As a leader, you rule with a firm but fair hand. You have a clear vision of what you want to create, and you organize those around you to manifest your goal. You listen to the advice of others, but you prefer to have the final say. Conflict doesn't scare you, and you wouldn't hesitate to use your power to protect those you care about." That could have been a fun way for Alex to describe Trump.
Those sentences remind me of this thing that people use to scam. It's called a Barnum statement, you know, where it could describe literally fucking everybody.
Oh, sure. I mean, there is a touch of that in this. Yeah. I don't know. I don't want to go too far into, like, I think
I prefer the I Ching. That's all I'm saying.
Same thing.
I like to throw some bones, Dan.
Oh, also, by the way, in tarot deck, there isn't a prince card. There's a knight. And there's no hero.
The hero card?
There's a fool.
I think he's talking about a Magic the Gathering deck.
He might be talking about that. All this is to say that Alex is very stupid and almost never knows what he's talking about, particularly when he ventures accidentally into the worlds of the supposedly evil things that he's against.
Yeah.
But Trump is the king card.
He's the king card.
King card. King of cups. Anyway, in this next clip. Oh, dude. So.
Yeah.
Christmas
Eve. You got very excited.
I did, because I forgot. I
really don't believe this is the Christmas Eve episode.
I forgot this clip was coming, because something ends up happening at the end of this episode that kind of, I thought that was what we were working towards.
Yeah.
I forgot about this clip. Alex should never have said this on air. This is really, really fucked up.
Do we have a list of those?
I mean, Larry Nichols shouldn't have blackmailed Congress.
Right, that's bad.
That's one. Alex shouldn't have let him say that.
No.
Alex,
everything Steve Pachenik has ever said.
Alex shouldn't have talked about being debriefed by Russian intelligence agents.
Of course
probably
not.
Shouldn't have said that on air.
Nope.
Shouldn't have talked about possibly killing his dogs.
Definitely not.
It's a long list.
It's a long list.
This one, I think, might have legal implications. He's having Roger Stone on. Roger's on the other end of the phone, and they're talking about how all this Russia stuff is bullshit. And Alex accidentally tells some backstage business.
Oh, no.
And I think that Alex is revealing something he really, really shouldn't reveal.
I was there. And you're like, well, this is off record, but I'll say it now. This is during the campaign. Yeah, Fox News just let me go as a contributor. It's not really supposed to be public. They pay me, but...
So first things first, Alex is putting Roger's business into the streets. That during the campaign, he was a paid contributor in Fox News. So, I mean, that is what it is. That's whatever.
Right.
But that gives us a time frame. It has to be after November 2015, because that's the first time that Roger appeared on Alex's show, to the election. It has to be in that time frame. Roger was fired from Fox News, and he comes to Alex.
You know, when InfoWars hire me? And I said, you know, Roger, you're a good guy on the show. When I promote your website and I sell your book, that's good.
So, Roger has come to Alex and he has asked him for a job at InfoWars.
Importantly, he said he saw his book. He did not read his book.
Well, his book was Making of the Presidency 20. Oh, it could have been one of his older books, though.
Yeah.
Like the one about LBJ killing Kennedy. Absolutely. And stuff like that. So, in 2016, at some point, Roger Stone started his own show on the Genesis Communications Network called The Stone Cold Truth. It was very short-lived. So that probably is right around when we're talking about here.
Yeah.
He asked Alex for a job. He got him a show on GCN, and then it went away.
I don't have a lot of extra money laying around, but I said, if you could get me Julian Assange, because you've been talking about your intermediary, honestly, this jerk goes on Fox News, CNN, MSNBC, New York Times video, but not us. And you're like, well, I'll try. I know this talk show host that no.
So Alex Jones has now just admitted on air that he directed Roger Stone to get in touch with Julian Assange. He's going to try and portray that as, like, it's no big deal. Roger was unsuccessful in getting in touch with him.
Sure.
Meanwhile. Sure.
Oh, boy.
If it does turn out that there is concrete evidence that Roger was in contact with them and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Like, if that evidence exists, which I think there's strong indications that he was. But the actual evidence of it, I think, is still forthcoming. And we'll see if it is the truth or if it's not. But if it is, Alex has just put himself in prison.
I know.
He just did it to himself.
This is the first time I've ever been like, God, I wish there really were like FBI agents from all around the world listening to this show. Because yes, they should be, because you are a crime committer. Just crime committed.
During the campaign, Roger Stone got fired as a contributor by Fox News, asked me for a job, and I said, you're a good guy.
I will only give you a job if you bring me the most illegal bring that you can give me. I I, Alex Jones, do hereby direct you to commit a crime for me.
Turns out Alex got us a Christmas gift, too, in the form of this stupid-ass clip.
Isn't that how Mark Richards is in jail forever? You can't direct somebody to commit a crime without being part of the crime yourself.
There's a little bit. So anyway, let's finish this clip up.
Oh, God.
No, Zeman. He's going, I mean, I remember you, I mean, I'm not trying to, like, oh, you want this job for me. It's just a story of what happened. I remember literally, you know, saying, no, you're not, and it was like a year till I gave you a job for other stuff, but because you're a good guy and give commentary. But
sure,
I was there.
The starting and ending that clip with I was there,
not good.
Not going to play out well for you, Alex.
Here's what I also, I didn't just direct you to commit that crime. I need to make sure that you know I was there when the crime was also committed.
And I made it a condition of getting a job with me, which, if that's the case, he did give Roger a job. So if Alex is presenting it as like, if you can get me in touch with Julian Assange, I will give you a job.
Yeah.
Logically, that, I mean, he did get a job.
Yep.
Did he come through with it? Now this is a whole new investigation for Mueller and all, you know?
Jesus.
I'm sure whatever the reality of the situation is, they already know. Anybody who's been investigating this with any kind of like, subpoena power and stuff like that, they already know. All of this is, it's no secret to official channels, but it's really funny for us on Christmas Eve that Alex Jones is in studio trying to get really defensive and accidentally reveals that he enlisted Roger Stone to contact Julian Assange. Then Roger Stone clearly was telling him that he did contact Julian Assange. I mean, remember that one episode we did?
Hark the heralds, I committed treason.
Remember that episode that we did where Alex stayed up super late in order to cover the WikiLeaks anniversary special?
Almost as if
Roger
knew
Stone
that it
had
was...
told him was going to be the big dump. So.
Yeah.
I think Alex is, I mean, this shows like, I get why you use fake quotes now. Cause this is, you are just,
man, Buckley just must the weakest possible link in this chain of propaganda. It's insane.
And Buckley and everybody else who works behind the scenes at InfoWars must do so much work to make, like, to keep this on track.
Yeah.
Cause left to his own devices, he's gonna just do shit like that. So many people must be telling him, Alex, don't say shit about this.
I was debriefed by Russian agents and I didn't contact the FBI.
Stop!
Oh, is that, should I not have said that? Oh, okay. I directed, Roger Stone to commit a crime.
Yeah,
I shouldn't have said that.
We gotta install a cough button.
Sandy Hook was 100% fake. Should I, oh boy.
I would have loved it if
Hamdi Alukaya fucks children. Ugh.
I would love it if there was like, if we were watching it and it was just sort of like, everything's going normally on the show. And he's like, Roger, you know, during the campaign, you came to me, you told me you got fired by Fox News. You said you wanted a job. I told you that if you get me Julian Assange, I'll give you a job. And then just all of a sudden, let's go out.
Just like, we're experiencing some technical difficulties.
Exactly. Just flashes up Alex Jones dancing out to the lobby with a hot dog
with
and
hot dogs
nachos. It'd be so great. Oh, just everybody diving over each other to hit that button, hit the intermission button. Like, holy shit. Alex, even if what you're saying is innocuous, don't fucking say that.
It's almost like sometimes he'll take a like Saved by the Bell break to just break the fourth wall and look at us and be like, by the way, I committed all these crimes, and then turn back to
Holy
Roger and be like,
shit.
Hey, what else are we narrativing about today?
I was totally expecting once Roger came on, because that's Alex giving him an introduction. He hasn't even said anything yet. I was fully expecting Roger to be like, Alex. Or something like that. Instead, he's just like, everybody has wronged me. It's just like, all right. He doesn't address the idea that he's like, I have always told the truth about everything. And, you know, I've told the House Intelligence Committee all the truth. And the record will show that I am not a liar. Like, all right.
I think Roger probably likes it. They probably have a deal put together where Alex donates $100,000 to his legal defense fund every time he ruins his legal defense.
Yeah, every time he airs dirty laundry, there's a fee. It's like a swear jar.
It's like a swear jar. Yeah.
So they don't talk much more about this, but they do spend a little time talking about that, the criminal justice reform, and how Trump is basically like a super liberal.
Let's talk about that, because you've got the criminal justice reform pulling troops out. I mean, this should be a wet dream for Democrats. Instead, they act like it's cyanide.
It's really extraordinary. In the last couple months, Donald Trump has legalized industrial hemp. He has talked about removing marijuana from the Schedule 1 list. He has ended the war in Syria. Ah. He's on his way to ending the war in Afghanistan.
Ah.
Real quick, I mean, ending the war in Syria is different than us withdrawing.
Not being in the war.
And also talking about legalizing marijuana or something like that.
No, he talked about it. That means
I
he's
talk
great.
About it all the time.
No, he's a super liberal. He's great.
I mean, that's cool. It's better than not, but it's Look, not actual progress.
He's a Republican president with a Republican Congress. Whenever he talks about marijuana reform, I imagine that everybody in the Republican-controlled Congress, again, it is a 100% Republican-controlled Congress and a Republican president and a Republican Supreme Court, I imagine they would have no trouble accomplishing literally any goal.
Trump says, he starts talking about legalized weed, he starts talking about medical marijuana, and just from the Supreme Court, from the Senate, you just hear a resounding, legalize it!
Yeah.
You just hear, you see fucking, Paul Ryan and Rand Paul put on like, Rastafari hats.
Yeah, for
absolutely.
Sure.
He has reformed our criminal justice system so that people, mostly minorities, don't go to jail for 15 years for a first-time nonviolent crime of marijuana possession. You would think the left would be happy, but because it's Donald Trump, we are against anything that he's for.
That is not true.
Yeah, actually, we're pretty all right with it. It's not far enough. It doesn't go far enough. But yeah, I think we're pretty cool with it.
That's interesting. Because one of the first things is what we already talked about is this is just sort of an extension of things from the Obama era that are adding on to already made progress, which is good. I'm not taking away from it.
Right.
Alex and Roger are acting like the Democrats are against this criminal justice reform because Trump is in favor of it as sort of just a way to cash in on a little bit of credibility or whatever. But that's not true. The largest voices in slight opposition were Kamala Harris, who said that she didn't think the reforms went far enough, but also didn't want to let her idealism allow, quote, perfect to be the, allow it to be the enemy of good.
Right.
Which is a good way to look at it.
It's a cliche that my high school baseball coach told me.
Elizabeth Warren was iffy on the bill because she also didn't feel like it went far enough. Not because she was against the bill itself. It's just there's more we could be doing. Literally all 12 nay votes in the Senate were Republicans. The same is true of every one of the 36 nay votes in the House. Not a single Democrat voted against this bill. But
I think that's because they hated it so much.
But 48 total Republicans in the House and Senate did. So where is your argument there? Your argument is non-existent. The idea that liberals are against this because Trump is for it, it doesn't hold water. This is nonsense.
I bet there's no way you could look into those Republicans that voted against it and find them getting money from private prisons or anything like that.
I don't know, talk to Marco Rubio.
There's no way that that could be the case.
So all that is just nonsense. Roger Stone's talking shit. But he's not the only one who's way out of line. In this next clip, Alex is trying to get to an ad pivot, but I think he might have started drinking.
Well, it is Christmas Eve.
It is.
You get to taste a little tipple, Dan.
He might have gotten into the nog, because he's sort of burping his way to this ad pivot
okay.
In a way that really makes me uncomfortable.
We're going to, on this live Christmas Eve broadcast, get into Trump's mind, why he's doing this, why he's standing up, and how the globalists are going to strike back. Trump believes you want prosperity. He believes you want freedom. The establishment thinks you're a bunch of idiots. We're about to find out what the truth is. Straight ahead with Roger Stone. Please don't forget, we still have store-wide free shipping. 50 to 75% off store-wide. Double Patriot points and a free t-shirt.
Free t-shirt. All the sales have been going so well that they are continuing.
Adding a free speech.
And a free t-shirt.
Yeah.
This is not good. So I'm going to suggest the argument that I don't know if he was drunk when he put Roger's business in the streets. I have no idea. But I'm certain he started drinking. And it's not just that the burping there, which is glaring.
Yeah.
But he could have been like eating lunch or something like that.
Hey, he's been eating hot dogs and nachos nonstop. Of course he's going to burp all the time.
So the show takes a bit of a turn. And I know that he was saying some pretty gross stuff, especially for Christmas Eve, where he's talking about stabbing the globalist in the gut.
They were getting stabbed. He's strangling, Dan. It's a manly thing to strangle.
Excuse me.
It's weak to stab.
And very feminine to poison. Which is what they're trying to do.
Sorry, Dad.
So in this next clip, he decides that he didn't go far enough. He's not thrilled with his performance in that first murder rant, and he's got to get into another one, and he's going to do it to the sweet sounds of Turn the Page.
To the engine moaning out his one old song. You can think,
you know, I don't have a death wish.
Or the girl,
but you know, I'm not afraid to die. I gotta carry out this mission.
Merry Christmas.
I get tired when I get older. The main thing I want to do is set my weight against the enemy. So I suffocate, they suffocate too. I'm not afraid to die. So when I look into their eyes, will they die politically? They can know they met somebody and afraid to die.
And you don't feel much like rap.
Because they think they're a snake wrapped around me. No. I'm the one wrapped around them.
And the meek shall inherit the earth.
Snug hold to make sure they never got away. When I start squeezing. When I start biting. When I start
poking.
They were
given shelter in the manger.
Up on the stage. All right, Roger, you were saying some powerful stuff during the break, but some stations don't carry this segment. I want you to launch into a Roger Stone-esque rant to really give us what you do behind the scenes at the office, which you never do on air, in the next segment. But
hey, look, Roger, this is usually like station identification for most of the radio stations that we're on, so I'm just going to ramble about being a boa constrictor, strangling the globalists and what have you, talking about killing them. And when we get back, I really want you to rant well. So please, make it look organic, because the radio stations won't hear this. One of those things that you never do, but it's off air. You're so vibrant off air. Do that when we get back. What the fuck is this? Fucking nonsensical murder rant that leads into him singing one line of Turn the Page and then telling Roger to bring it when they come back from break because it'll actually be on the radio. So fucking weird. And again, we can't stress this enough. This is Christmas Eve. The sacredest of holidays for Alex Jones.
The spirit of our Lord Jesus Christ.
I must tell you that I am
a boa constrictor willing to kill.
I'm going to compare myself to the very thing that Satan is compared to in my cosmology.
Right.
So they do come back from break, and Roger Stone, I'm not entirely sure if he really brought it in the way that Alex wants him to, but he brought it in the way I wanted him to, and that is to say, he makes the claim that he has never lied intentionally on InfoWars. He has never... Like, because, you know, that whole...
This is immediately after his apology.
Well, this is, yeah, this is about him settling that lawsuit.
Yes, of course.
Where he lied about Miles Kwok and then had to not pay... Not, you know, I don't want to pay $100
million,
so I'm
going
to go ahead
like
and turn
million.
Tail and run on this
Sir,
one.
I would like $100 million.
Oh, I totally lied about you. Sorry about that. That's on me. But it was Sam Nunberg's fault. So,
okay,
cool.
Well then
we'll settle this lawsuit.
Yeah, perfect.
So he, he's now gotten into the damage control mode of the apology, which is, they're saying I lie about things I did not lie, which is couched in the idea that he's like, Sam Nunberg told me bad things and I didn't knowingly lie.
Right.
I was just correcting myself. Now what's interesting is that this clip is a minute long, and within this minute, Roger Stone will say that he never knowingly lied about anything, and then proceed to lie seconds later about Alex Jones.
Last week you saw an incredible smear. Stone admits to lying on InfoWars. I never said anything of the kind. In fact, let me make this clear. I have never reported or broadcast anything whatsoever on InfoWars or any platform that I knew at the time I reported it, it was false.
Smash cut to him telling Alex
at
that
the time I reported it.
Smash cut to him telling Alex that General McMaster is trying to poison Trump's Diet Cokes with a slow-acting sedative narcotic.
He didn't know that wasn't true at the time he reported it.
Cowardly dodge.
Nah.
When I have made mistakes, and every American, every human being has, I have promptly corrected those mistakes.
Point to one
again,
time.
That was the setup. That was the part of the smear, trying to establish that Roger Stone is a liar. I'm proud of the work that I've done here at InfoWars. Mm-hmm. We've broken major story after major story. I'm sorry that they get PO'd at CNN and MSNBC and the Associated Press and the New York Times when we're a day ahead of them with the news. When we report
liar.
They things before they even know them. But that's what we do at InfoWars. Tomorrow's news today. Lie. So what you see is an insidious smear here, Alex, and you've been experiencing it. You never said no one died at Sandy Hook. Lie. You never said no one died at Parkland High School. But when you say that, when you respond, when you counterpunch, they don't cover the counterpunch. They just continue to recycle the same smear.
So in that clip, he's saying that he has never reported things that he knows are not true on InfoWars. 15 seconds later, he says that Alex never said that no one died at Sandy Hook.
Yeah.
Bad news, man. You know that he did. You know damn well that he did.
Yeah.
Because if I worked for Alex Jones, let's say I didn't know, right? Let's say I didn't know what he did back at the time of Sandy Hook. If I worked for him and a bunch of people were making the accusation that he said that no one died and argued that quite a bit on his show, I would probably go and check. I would look into it. I would want to know the truth. Because if the person I was working for did say that, I wouldn't want to work for him. And if he didn't say that, I would want to be able to point to the things that people were accusing him of and be able to defend my employer, who was a noble and righteous person. There's no way that I would just be like, well, I'll take you at your word. You never said it. There's no way. The stakes are way too high. So the idea that Roger Stone is trying to present, like, I could have plausible deniability that I don't know if it's true or not, that you... He's not saying that. He's saying that Alex never said that Sandy Hook was fake, and he did.
They are going to hire the disgraced reporter from Der Spiegel almost immediately.
Oh,
right?
Man.
They are going to hire him.
Dude.
Hey, whoa. I never knowingly made up those quotes.
Dude, I didn't even cut that stuff.
They were talking about him?
Oh, quite a bit.
How?
Well, because they were saying that he's going to get a job at CNN. Kind of made the same joke you did.
Fair enough. I apologize and retract
great
that
minds.
Joke. Retract that joke. 100%.
No, they were talking about it and they were trying to present it as like he was basically only writing fake stories about how white people in Texas hate Mexicans.
Sure, that's what
something
he was
like
writing
that.
Stories about?
Yeah. They try and create it as like he was trying to...
Award-winning journalist for German newspaper Der Spiegel was only writing about Texans?
Well, Alex was trying to create the perception that the lies and the fake stories that he wrote about were all trying to foment racial division and stuff
course.
Like that.
No, of course.
It's
that makes sense.
It's a bit of a stretch. But not as much of a stretch as this next clip.
Roger Stone, the supposed Russian mastermind.
Do you notice, though, too, it is important, he's breathing a lot heavier than
yeah.
he was.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
you could
yeah.
hear, I'm going to start this clip over. Just
he sounds like Darth Vader.
Listen to this breathing.
Roger Stone, the supposed Russian mastermind. There's no proof of it, but 2 years in, Robert Mueller, the bagman for uranium for Hillary to the Russians, the man who many believe is the top KGB agent in the United States, basically, now
yeah.
the FSB,
many people.
Is in a giant prosecution against President Trump in a desperate attempt to stop us recovering our economy and rebuilding our military. The man who had boosted our economy over $4 trillion, we're now told, is a Russian agent by people handled by the Russians.
So Mueller is a KGB agent, probably the top KGB agent in the United States.
That sounds right.
Cool,
I
man.
Mean, if you were a former director of the FBI and then became an FBI or a Kremlin agent, or if you were a Kremlin agent that
the whole
became
time?
Head of the FBI,
crazy.
You are the top KGB agent.
You're the top agent, period.
Yeah, yeah, for any country.
Yeah, you're not even either.
Yeah,
you're,
yeah, yeah.
You're
no,
your
no.
own thing.
You're the winner.
None of that is real. And the uranium and stuff, we've talked about that 100 times. That's all a lot of bullshit. I get the sense, as I was listening to this, I ended up having to watch some clips of it. I was just listening to it as the radio show.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
But I had, some stuff ended up becoming so extreme that I had to be like,
I gotta see this.
Theater of the mind will not do.
Right.
I had to confirm that he was actually doing the things that he said he was doing,
uh-huh.
which we'll get to in a minute.
Okay.
But I was watching this and I really get the sense that he wasn't drunk when he started the show and he's drunk by this point.
Yeah.
I think he started taking some shots or something like that. I'm not sure at what point exactly. Hard to nail down, but he is not the same level of sober that he, it's not consistent.
Everybody enjoys a nice Christmas bourbon, Dan. Everybody enjoys a nice little tipple on the Christmas Eve. You know, you're 14 and your parents are like, hey, guess what? We're all going to enjoy this nice little brandy together.
My friend, I'm
and
not...
one of those parents is Alex Jones, and he drinks all the brandy by himself during his show.
I want to make it clear. I'm not judging in any way. I'm not some sort of Puritan who's saying don't drink, but I am saying...
At work, I am. I am a Puritan.
I'm not even on that tip. Back when I used to work at Groupon, it was nothing but booze flying around
well,
that
yeah.
place.
But I mean, yeah.
Or even at that coffee place. A lot of booze on Fridays, especially.
That sounds great.
There's, you know, I get it. People are adults, no big deal. I do think that when you're in a position where you're putting out dangerous rhetoric into the world, about things that matter, you probably should, if you're drunk, you better be right. You better have your, like, all of your ducks in a row.
Right.
If you're going to be wrong and that sort of fun, like, hey, I'm buzzed. Isn't
yeah.
this cool?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
That just doesn't work. When you're carrying water for, you know, things that lead to the deaths of people around the world and you're like flippantly drunk and fun at work, it's not, you can't do that.
No.
Because I don't need to say why. It's
I would
clear.
Hope not.
It's clear.
It's kind of like shackling pregnant women. It really shouldn't have been a conversation we needed to have.
Yeah. So in this next clip, Alex wants to talk economy, baby. And
I am assuming that he is going to talk about the massive stock drop and how it was one of the worst days since the Great Depression.
You bet he is.
But this is really the big one. Because if people don't get this, and how obvious it is, so there's nothing they won't put up with. The latest financial news is up on DrudgeReport.com because Drudge gets this is the big story. Stocks extend fall despite Munchen bid to reassure investors.
Moonshine.
I was going to say, did he just say Munchen?
You would really think if you were in love with Donald Trump, you would know how to say Steve Mnuchin.
Munchen?
You would
Munchen.
Think. You would think.
He has a crescent chin. Of course his nickname is Munchen.
You'd think you'd know the guy.
Maybe.
It reminds me of how, like, he couldn't pronounce Tim Geithner for a really
yeah,
long time.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Like, it's just one of the
Geithner.
Have you only seen this in print? Like, what is going on? Have you
seen this in print?
Is this a new name?
Have you only heard this name and you just don't understand English like the rest of us?
Is this spelled, like, phonetically but wrong?
Alex. Sound it out, man. Sound it out. Mnuchin. Sound it out.
I think Buckley writes his scripts, but it's all just like, you know, like
phonetic, phonetic.
No, it's, like,
no, it's drawing.
Pictographs. Yeah. That's what it is. I don't know. This is nonsense. But anyway, to his point.
Presidents get involved in the plunge protection team or the president's group on open markets all the time, but the media hyped it like, look, they're trying to boost the market. That shows it's desperate. Dump, dump, dump. So mainstream media is saying dump stocks.
They didn't say that. Quote,
I really don't think
teach Americans
that.
Lessons.
Did they say that?
And then they think you don't have a memory. They'll tell you in a week, oh, look, the stock market tanked. It's Trump's fault.
Nope. And he says there at the end, when they did it. They didn't do that. You're accusing people of people doing things they didn't do, and the stock market jumped way back up.
Yeah.
So, like, he's just trying to all he's doing is being opportunistic about the circumstances that are in front of him right in the moment, not taking into consideration that what happens tomorrow might be a piece of the story that you're unaware of. What
right.
happened yesterday is a part of the story.
I'm kind of still fascinated.
Moonshine.
I'm still fascinated whenever, like, we do have those. Here's the stock market update on regular news outlets,
because
by this point they should know that the stock market update doesn't really affect anything in anybody's life.
It's,
and it's all automated.
It's
and,
filling time.
And it's built around, and now it's massively artificial intelligence based. Like, nobody knows what the fuck is going on.
I mean, it's the same thing with, like, I mean, all those news shows, even the, like, local news that have to fill an hour every day.
Yeah, that's true.
Like, you still have time you gotta fill, and you're just not great at it. That's why companies like Sinclair are so insidious,
yeah.
is because they offer a solution to a problem that a lot of news stations have, which is filling that time.
Right.
A lot of that stock kind of stuff is yeah, whoever's watching doesn't need that necessarily.
No.
Same thing with weather. Like, most weather reports are unnecessary.
No, come on. How dare you?
I want Tom Skilling
You want
fired.
Skilling out of a job?
Yes.
He is a Chicago staple,
I don't
man.
Give a shit. I have a deep-seated.
If Serengeti will reference Skilling, then you don't have any choice.
I have a deep-seated distrust of weathermen. I really think.
Really?
I think that they are arch perverts. and
Woo!
Well,
whoa!
See, here's the thing.
That's a jump.
Meteorology is something that not a lot of people get into studying.
I actually heard that Weinstein invented meteorology.
It's
that's
possible.
That's why you know they're all
ready
perverts.
To believe it.
Yep.
It's not something that tons of people study, and the subset of the people who study it who are also camera ready is a very small group.
Yes.
So these people who are charismatic enough and actually can discuss meteorological things and the weather and not sound like complete idiots reading a script, those sorts of people know that their jobs are so fucking protected.
Mm-hmm.
And when they go to cities like Chicago, LA, New York, those sorts of things, and become institutions on the news,
yeah.
Like Tom Skilling.
Like Tom Skilling.
Not saying anything specific about him at all,
no, who
but
gives
people
a fuck?
Like him.
I don't know if people like him so much as he's just around.
No, I'm saying people similar to him.
Ah,
people
like him. Oh, okay. Now I got it.
They know that they have the definition of job security. So I'm not saying they're doing criminally perverted things. I'm just saying... that I don't trust
that there are no yeah. no consequences
absolutely
for their actions
absolutely.
Why can't we bring in you've seen the topless women the topless Russian women who do the news.
I
why
don't,
can't we
I'm
can bring those in.
I'm unaware of this.
Who everybody's aware of the topless women the topless Russian women specifically.
Listen, we're too puritanical for that. We demand that our weathermen do pervy things off air.
Right. Oh boy.
So I don't know. Just a theory. Anyway. Yes, I agree. Your point, stock stuff is unnecessary.
Yeah.
Point taken. So we have one more clip before everything goes completely wrong on this episode.
Uh-huh.
And this clip I'm only playing because I think it is super important. And that is, I wrestle from time to time with the idea of what we do. Because Alex's, his show is copyrighted. He owns it. And there is like a slight fear in my mind that one day he'll just decide...
to sue us for copyright infringement?
Yeah, that sort of thing. And I know that, generally speaking, what we do falls under fair use rules and things like that, but I never want to deal with it. Like, I'd never want to open that. And I'm playing this next clip.
I've always wanted to represent myself in court. That sounds great.
Pro se. I'm playing this next clip because it's Alex giving us permission to use his content.
Oh, okay.
So, let this stand on the record.
All our stuff's free to air. People send me emails all the time. Can I put InfoWars on the side of my barn? Yeah, First Amendment says you can. I'm begging you, please do it. We're free to air. I'm not sitting here territorializing what we do. Plus, you have that right. Just get the information out.
We're doing our best, Alex.
Can we use your show? Is that tacit approval? Cool. Thanks, buddy. Hey, can we ask you for other favors? Like, could you please sue us so we can just play that clip in court? I would love that. I just want to get sued that specific. We're using digital copyright millennium rules to take you down, and we'll just play that clip in court, and the judge will be like,
judgment in favor of knowledge.
Bye.
Yeah. So, like I said, everything goes off the rails.
Yeah.
And I think it's because Alex has been having some booze, and also. His guests. Oh, also, by the way.
Does he talk about Christmas?
Not much. A tiny bit.
Yeah.
Maybe. I mean, he mentions that he's not going to have he's going to have a rebroadcast on Christmas. But in terms of like the Christmas story,
right.
What Christmas means, a Christmas message of love.
Or even anything Christian at all. He hasn't even really gotten religious.
He's talked about devils, which is his version of Christian.
Good point.
He's talked about the tarot deck.
Right. Which is his version of Christian.
I will say that there are a couple times that I just didn't cut because it seemed like excessive and repetitive.
Uh-huh.
But most of the times he mentions Christmas at all, it's in an ad pivot. Like it's Christmas here and we're not going to be able to get you the products by Christmas, but
right.
Give us money. That sort of thing. There is very little Christmas in this.
Yeah.
But one gift that he gives America is that Owen Benjamin is now hosting the Fourth Hour from time to time.
Okay.
Which I didn't realize. Failed comedian.
No.
Real dum-dum.
No.
Guy who's not welcome in the intellectual dark web.
No.
Owen Benjamin.
Come on.
Is now an InfoWars Fourth Hour host. And boy. Woof.
Is his comedy career doing better now?
Great. He's doing great.
Good.
I was worried about
that.
That is not where it goes off the rails. It goes off the rails in the third hour, because before he hands the baton to Owen Benjamin, He has a guest on the show. It's actually two dudes. And these people don't belong on air at all. What they have done, I can't even remember their names, but it sounds something like the Spaghetti Brothers. It's very close.
Okay.
Sangatini, bro. I don't know. Who cares?
Okay. The Great Santini?
They created a Flash game, about Alex. So, it's a Flash game.
They created a Flash game.
Where it's, you can Google this. It's like Alex versus the NPCs or something like that.
Yeah, the entire,
I watched someone beat the game. It takes 4 minutes.
Uh-huh.
And all it is a cartoon, a crudely drawn cartoon of Alex walking across, a plane. And he has a hatchet in his hand. He's like an axe.
Uh-huh.
And then, somebody, there'll be like a clip of Lester Holt or, somebody on TV saying something, critiquing of Alex. And, you have to hit the button at the right time and it hits them with an axe and kills them.
Yeah. Okay. And so it's like the plot of Air Force One.
If you successfully axe all of them on the way to the end goal, Trump shows up as the sun and smiles upon you.
Oh.
It's very fucked up and also probably took them, hour
15,
and a half.
15,
maybe.
20 minutes?
I'm going to say an hour and a half.
Yeah. Okay.
That's my guess.
Yeah.
But because the game is about Alex,
you're guests on our show,
and he thinks it's the best thing in the world.
Absolutely. Yeah, you could do any search for NPC versus Alex Jones or Alex Jones versus NPC, and you'll find us right there on the first page. The video or the game will be available there, and the video has the link to the game.
You can search the name
of
our
Trump
game
is the sun smiling down. Direction. That's a good thing.
And it puts me in a good mood.
Yeah, I love that, buddy.
Yeah, love Trump being the sun.
Love Trump being the sun. That's great.
Reminds me of Mario, where the sun is the bad guy in Mario 3. Wasn't that right? Isn't that? No. Well,
no.
Which Mario game is that? Well, I mean,
Mario 2?
No, that's not the sun. That's just that creepy Fanto.
Oh, the sun, like the actual sun in the desert world. Yeah, that's Super Mario 3.
Yeah, where you have to jump over the sun. That freaked me out as a fucking kid. Yeah. That's what Trump being the sun reminds me of, is the evil sun in
the
Mario
The evil
3.
Sun who attacks you.
Yeah, yeah.
You gotta stay out of his flight path.
So, this video game, which I hesitate to call a video game because of its simplicity, but this game, it's Alex Jones killing people with an axe. And he fucking loves that.
I don't understand the metaphor there.
He's taking down these NPCs.
An axe.
Saving the world from, and each time you kill one of them, a new logo will pop up on the side of the screen of what he has destroyed.
It'll be like CNN.
All of them made sense as it was going along, but then one of them was Pinterest. Like, wait, did Alex have beef with Pinterest?
Absolutely.
Like, what's going on?
When was the last time you saw a pin on Pinterest of Alex Jones?
I'm going to teach you how to make an apple pie.
That would be nice.
I wouldn't eat that apple pie.
I would watch a cooking show if Alex was doing it, though.
My very drunk kitchen.
The Great Fake British Bake Off is sure. What the name
it's
of it is.
Just him doing that. Ooh, ooh,
we're going to make some fucking turnovers or whatever it is.
Fancy assholes.
So, because the video game involves him killing people with an axe.
Yes.
He finds an axe in studio. And this leads to trouble.
Why does he have an axe in studio?
I don't know.
Did he also call that 12-year-old and have him kill a piggy bank again?
Oh, no, that wasn't a 12-year-old. That was an adult.
Whatever. He was talking like it. Yeah.
You know what? There are similarities in these two interviews because he was trying to impress and hang with that guy.
Yeah.
You kill your piggy bank.
Hey, look, I'm cool and I'm young. Yeah.
Kill that dog.
Yeah.
That's
what do you think about this NPC meme, guys?
It's going to go away. But these guys didn't think that. They decided to make a fucking game out of it. But he's trying to impress them, and so he pulls out his big axe.
Uh-huh.
I believe it's maybe a hatchet. And this is why I had to go find the video. Because if you listen to this clip, I don't think you'll believe that it accurately describes what is going on in studio.
Let's go back to our friends. There's no one in the studio right now. And I don't know where they got this crazy tomahawk. Seriously, what are these doing around the office? But there's camera 5 about 30 feet away. And the question is, can I hit camera 5? No training. The problem is I could definitely get it, but that light's in my way. This is going to mess up. I don't want to mess up anything. But this is the kind of stuff you do on Christmas Eve. Let me see.
What?
I'm going to do it. It's all right. Hit the light. See, I told you the light was in the way. Hey, I get 3 chances. Bring the hatchet back, please.
You are drunk.
He's in the middle of his show.
Wow, is he drunk?
In studio, he pulls out a hatchet. He's like, I bet I can hit that camera in my professional TV studio with a fucking hatchet.
That insanely cheap camera that cost us almost no money. And at a time
very
when we are
camera.
Absolutely not
begging
hemorrhaging
people for money.
Shit tons of money, I am going to throw this hatchet in a metaphor for how I feel about my own show at this point.
I wish to destroy the things that allow me to go deeper into this world that I am in.
That is
fucked up.
Subconscious crying for help right there.
I feel like there is a bit of that, which Christmas is a time for that. Not hatchet throwing.
No, this is the type of thing you do on Christmas Eve. Did he say that out loud?
He did. Oh. You know, Christmas is the time where you throw fucking hatchets at electronics. That's what you do.
Yeah.
So,
Jesus.
I thought, first of all, when I heard that, I was like, what the fuck's going on here? Because it's so out of line with not only his show most of the time, but the rest of this episode too. I was like, he's got to just be fucking around with these guys or something.
Right.
Found the video. He's straight up throwing hatchets around the
studio.
And
it's a real hatchet.
Oh, you bet. And it's not small. It's a pretty big hatchet.
Why does he have hatchets hanging around the studio?
Don't know.
Did somebody get him hatchets?
I'm going to allow it because, like, maybe there's a toolkit somewhere or something like that.
With hatchets?
I don't fucking know.
With multiple hatchets. It's not the same hatchet each time, is
it? It's one hatchet.
Oh, okay, good.
He has one hatchet as far as I can tell.
All right, that is way more acceptable, because the way you made it sound, it was like he had a bunch of hatchets, like, hey, where did I find this Santa Claus bag filled with hatchets?
He has a bunch of guns, one hatchet, as far as I can tell. And this is actually kind of, it might be Alex's.
That internet video fucked me up. Two guns, one hatchet. Did you see that one?
This also might be Alex's soft launch into trying to get the Juggalos to like him by doing some hatchet play.
The Juggalos would not like you, Alex.
So when I was watching this, like I said, completely blown away, by what's happening. And then I thought when he said, I get another try, I thought that someone in studio would be like, you've had enough,
Alex, come on.
Calm down.
Hey.
But it does not go that way. He gets the hatchet back and tries again.
Can someone bring the hatchet back?
You're drunk.
We're going to do it. Go back to Alex Jones. I'll get my own hatchet.
Alex, you're drunk.
Go back to Alex Jones. This is Christmas
you
Eve right
now. Me and lied.
So real quick.
This is
that's audio of the game. It has that shitty guitar riff in it.
All right.
He's flashing back to pictures of the video of the game while one of his attendants or whatever is getting the hatchet back for him, and he's probably taking another drink while the camera's
off. His aide-de-camp, if you will.
Yes, absolutely.
I can't do things in simulation. No. You don't approve of it? Oh, no. No one's in here. What's your other room? All right, back to me. Let me see if I can get camera 5 now, because I was going to get it. It's a good 30 feet away.
Just threw it again.
TV that time.
He hit a TV.
We got to keep going here, because third time's the charm right now with the hatchet. It's Christmas Eve. My God, here. We're doing good here with the hatchet. You guys are the ones that brought the hatchet. We can't just do this in, like, the third dimension, the fourth dimension. All right, this is the final shot. If I can't make it now, I'm no good.
Media giants are coming together. Take down.
All right, stuck in the wall, but I didn't get it. All right, actually, it was all 3D. None of it was real. Oh, my God, can we zoom in on that TV over there? That is badass.
So he did hit a camera, or he hit a TV.
He hit a light, he hit a TV, and he stuck the hatchet in the wall.
The third throw hit the wall, and they panned to where it hit. It was literally like 6 inches from a fire extinguisher. If he had nailed that fire extinguisher, it would have been a giant explosion in the studio. Like, this is crazy levels of irresponsible. I think that there's something really funny about it if this is a show like, I don't know, some sort of shock jock show or something like that. If this isn't Alex Jones, this is amazing radio.
Right.
This is a lunatic
drunkenly
throwing a hatchet
like
around his $1 million
studio. True TV or whatever.
If I saw this in a different context, I'd be all for it. And on some level, I am for it. All he's doing is destroying his own things.
This just broke my heart because God damn it, if the best Christmas gift in history wouldn't be the headline, Alex Jones throws hatchet, blows up his own studio.
I mean, think about it. Like,
that'd be insane.
I mean, it wouldn't blow up the studio, but it would cause shrapnel, like if he had hit the fire extinguisher. Like, the way they panned to it, it's clear that the camera operator was very close to where that hatchet ended up hitting.
Right.
So, like, if he had hit the guy with the at the camera with the hatchet, that would have been crazy.
That
would have
been crazy.
Or if he had hit the fire extinguisher, a piece of metal probably would have shot out and hit the might have hit one of his staff members. That could be incredibly fucked up. He narrowly dodged, like, a real crisis.
I would have given anything for him to have hit a gas line.
Oh.
And then, like,
oh,
just then at the end of the show, been like, it's Christmas Eve, guys. I think it's time to light up a cigar. Click, click, click. It just won't. Like, can somebody else get me a lighter? All right.
Chestnuts burning on an open studio.
So good.
Closed studio.
So good.
Secret location studio. So he's drunk as shit.
He's drunk as shit.
That's like a level of, like, whoever's in charge, like, he keeps saying no one's here, but there are people there.
Yeah.
Which leads me to believe that, like, Buckley or his dad or whoever, like, normally keeps him in check isn't there.
Right.
That's what he means by that.
Yeah.
And that's why it's okay for him to throw a hatchet around. No one's here who's actually going to get you in trouble. You guys, be cool. I'm the fun guy.
I own the place. Come on, man.
I'm your fun parent.
I'm the guy.
Right. Yeah.
Let's have a good time. Hey, you guys want to smoke a little weed? Because I'm going to throw a fucking hatchet at you.
So,
is that what you want?
So, but I still think, even though there's no authority figure there, he went too far. So they go to commercial, they get done with this interview, and he comes back from commercial, and he has clearly been told, you're done for the day.
InfoWars has given the gift of thought.
Did you get drunk?
But you gave us that gift, didn't you? God, I'd love to have a white Christmas, snow on the ground. My daughters love that. Only had that once. Went to Colorado like 10 years ago. But most of my daughters weren't even born then. I got $3. God almighty, I'm blessed. You know, I've got a special report I want to air about LeBron James, who is a good-looking, really talented guy, but he's a traitor against humanity. He's a real piece of crap.
So he ends up playing like a 10-minute special report that he recorded apparently the day before in a hotel room. It's clearly an instance of, like, whoever is, like, there and on the level is like, Alex, you're in no shape to be on air.
Yeah.
You're throwing a hatchet around the studio for no fucking reason.
Yeah.
We keep telling you.
What are you, my dad?
You could hear while he was throwing the hatchet, there were people who were like, and he was pushing back against it. It was clearly a thing that's like, we need to save you from yourself. You're done. It's the third hour. Owen Benjamin will be here to host the fourth hour shortly. Just throw it to a special report. That's all you have to do. You got to go to bed, or you got to take a nap,
yeah,
or
yeah,
get some coffee in you or something, because you're a danger to yourself and our show.
You are a physical danger to everyone here.
Before you were even that drunk, you admitted that you told Roger to contact Assange.
Everybody's like, fine with that.
What are you gonna do if we let you do the next 15 minutes?
That's kind of the fun of a really awful asshole boss, though, is whenever he admits to committing treason on air, you're like, ha ha ha, this is gonna be a good day.
Yeah. I don't know. So that's where we leave off, because who cares about his LeBron James report? It's
We don't want to know about his LeBron James report?
A lot of bullshit.
Oh, we don't want to know
might be racially charged in some ways.
No.
Also,
come on.
Very relevant to Christmas.
I mean, the LeBron did, you know, he got injured on Christmas Day, so that could be Alex's doing.
Could be.
He
could be the Patriots.
Groin. Now, he didn't tear his groin, though, so that could be, it's a double miracle. Mm-hmm. Alex gets what he wants, but we also get to have LeBron back next week.
Everybody wins a little bit. So yeah, I mean, this is all to say Merry Christmas to one and all. This was crazy. Because when I sat down, I fully fucking expected Alex to take a day off from the nonsense.
I thought it was going to be all religion, right?
I did too.
Yeah.
I thought it was going to be a retelling of the story of Christmas, maybe with him misinterpreting some things.
Right.
I thought it was going to be funny, like him trying to weave around the idea of not allowing immigrants.
While at the same time being like, Jesus would never have been born if they didn't allow immigrants.
I thought there was going to be something like that, a repackaging of Christmas mythology something. And instead, we get, I told Roger to contact Julian Assange. We get, I'm drunk and throwing an axe around the fucking studio. We get, I'm incapable of evil. It's just, he's so far gone that he is unpredictable on a level that is.
I know.
It's funny if you detach a little bit.
Yeah.
Devoid of the world we live in, this is hilarious.
Yes.
In the world we live in, it's terrifying, and very sad.
It's like if you're an uncle and you go to your brother or sister's place and their kids are just hell raisers and they're throwing shit all around and you're like, ha ha ha, I'm the uncle. I'm gonna fucking, yeah, let's get these guys doing all kinds of crazy shit. I'm your fun uncle. But if you're the parents, you're like, this motherfucker has burned goddamn the White House to the ground.
Or
and it is ruining everything and you're breaking everything. You need to stop it.
Or even if you're the uncle, but you guys live in like a duplex.
Ooh,
like you
that's
live,
no good, yeah.
You know, or live next door or something like, or live in the same house or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah, we have to share an apartment of a country.
Right.
And, it's unfortunate how, not too far outside, the conservative mainstream, a lot of the beliefs that he's espousing are, which is really, really scary.
He's a child.
On fucking Christmas Eve, this is what he brings to the table.
But that,
it's fucking nonsense.
That there I can't do evil speech
crazy.
Is clearly guilt. Like that,
yes.
I can't do 100%. Evil speech is 100% his way of expressing how guilty he feels about all the evil that he's doing.
Which is what you do on Christmas.
Right.
I
and throw a hatchet.
Which, the thing that's even crazier is that, like, the fundamental premise of his existence is to be basically a Christian, white, Western apologist.
Yeah.
Like, that is what he does. That's what he's done almost his entire career, dating back to the days of Waco and Oklahoma
right.
City.
Right,
his
right,
militia
right.
roots. Coming into studio on Christmas Eve and doing some sort of a fake intellectualized version of why Christmas is great.
Yeah.
Serves that purpose. And the fact that he can't even get there
yeah.
to do that means he's not having fun with anything.
No.
The only thing he can have fun with anymore is getting really drunk and throwing an axe around his studio. And that doesn't bode well for 2019.
Nope.
But it bodes well for me because I still think
we're
it's
having
fucking,
a great
I think
time.
It's hilarious.
Yeah. No. This is way better than a normal present day Alex episode. Right. If he starts throwing hatchets as a segment, mm-hmm. I'm in.
I feel empathy, but at the same time, I also think it's good. It's good radio. So
it is good radio.
Whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway, Merry Christmas, Alex.
Merry Christmas, Alex.
I wish you nothing.
I don't know. Samhain.
We'll see. We'll see what he does for New Year's. It'll probably be even better.
Oh man, he is going to be drunk as shit.
Love to see him do a countdown.
Ooh.
Ooh, we might end up finding out what the secret of 2019 is.
Oh, shit. We're going to have to do so many secrets of.
I can't wait to find out what that is.
We didn't get a secret of 2018,
we? Didn't, but we might get the secret of 2019 because the Christmas gift of InfoWars is the knowledge of the future.
That's true.
Which we learned earlier.
That
so
is true.
That's fantastic.
Yeah.
Anyway, this is the end of the episode.
Alex committed a crime, everybody. Just in case anybody missed. It's weird how our episodes work in that, like, the single biggest news that happened is that Alex literally said that he directed Roger to commit a crime.
Yeah. There is that. The only reason I don't put too much stock in it is that, like, I do believe Alex when he's saying that because it doesn't feel like his normal lying.
Right.
The way he's,
exactly.
The way he's expressing that and being like, all right, we talked off air, you know, you and I know that I'm not telling your business or something. He's defensive about telling it.
Yeah.
There's almost
like
I don't want to say this.
If it was something that he was like, I don't mean to brag, but I told you to do this whole thing.
Or if he was like, I was there, you know, you were working at Fox and you came on to InfoWars, I'll leave it at that.
Right.
Just the sort of thing that he always does. The fact
right.
that he actually spelled out the, I wanted to hire you on the condition that you got in touch with Julian Assange. I mean, it's fucked up. It's very fucked up.
That's fucked up.
But I still don't know what actions Alex could or could not have taken that reached the level of crime. It
Dear
seems
FBI.
Bad. I mean, it seems bad. Seems like he shouldn't be saying
even,
that.
I don't even think we need. That's not even like a Mueller thing. That's just like a regular FBI thing. Hey, regular FBI, not investigating this shit. Maybe this guy committed a crime.
I mean, it fills in some sort of timeline questions and stuff like that. Certainly.
Sure does.
Like the idea of when was Roger actively trying to get in touch with Julian Assange? I mean,
right.
Obviously Alex does know because he told him to. I don't know.
And we know that it wasn't while he was part of the official campaign.
That's true. This
so,
is after.
So this is after, and presumably after he's been let go by Fox News. He doesn't have a gig. He gets this bullshit offer from Alex, and then he starts saying, I want to help the Trump campaign out, which
well, no,
is
that's,
kind
that's
of
unfair.
Leveraging his...
That's unfair. Even, like, so he... Roger left the campaign. I believe he quit. I don't think he got fired. I think that was an intentional fake beef
between him
and Trump.
I agree.
But he left in August of 2016. I'm sorry. 2015.
Yeah.
And when he left, even after Trump was saying that he fired him and all that shit, Roger was very clear publicly that he still supported Trump.
Yeah.
Like all that. Some of it was couched in being anti-Hillary, but it was also, if the perception was that he was fired, it looks very magnanimous that he still supports Trump.
Yeah.
And if he quit, if you believe he quit, it looks like he just believes so strongly in what Trump stands for that his whole line on it was, I wasn't being effective in the campaign. I could help out better outside.
Right.
So he never, even though he quit / got fired, whatever, like, even though that, he never stopped supporting Trump.
Yeah.
So from the jump, in the campaign, no matter at what point he was trying to reach out to WikiLeaks, whether it be at the behest of Trump or Alex, which is a weird thing that we now have to consider.
I don't know.
He was still under the aegis of the campaign.
Yeah, like, he has to be thinking that he's going to get a pardon. Mm-hmm. That's the only way any of his actions make sense.
Yeah. Yeah,
it's the only way. He's figuring he's going to get a HW deal.
Of course he'll take
or a Nixon deal.
Of course
he'll
take a lot of the heat, like in terms of being a lightning rod for attention with his lawsuit against Mueller and stuff.
Yep.
Roger will sort of slide a little bit. The information will come out. They'll deny it. They'll say fake news, all this stuff, blah, blah, blah. I tried to get in touch with him. Sure, I was unsuccessful, X, Y, or Z.
Yeah.
He'll get a pardon because why bring
they
the country through this
trouble?
They can
indict a ham sandwich. Yeah, right. Yeah.
It'll be something like that, probably.
Yep.
I don't know. Or maybe it won't. Who fucking knows? I have no idea. All I know is what Alex tells me, and what he told me is he told Roger to contact Julian Assange. So, Merry Christmas, Alex.
As a special Christmas gift, Alex, please tell us about more crimes you have committed.
Or throw more axes. One of the two.
Well, that'd be great.
Throw an axe our way at our website, knowledgefight.com.
Nice!
Not that nice.
No,
it
wasn't. It's all right.
We also have an axe Twitter. It's knowledge_fight.
Right. You can find us on Facebook.
Yep, you're there. We have a group called Go Home and Tell Your Mother You're Brilliant.
Indeed. You can find us on the iTunes. Throw a subscribe. Throw a review. Throw an axe our way, baby.
Yeah, absolutely. So we get to the end of this episode, and I will say that
I'll say right now, the cameraman who got an axe thrown near his way
did not kill anybody. But one guy, not with an axe, probably, but he did kill a guy, technically, probably, Alex Jones. Could have been two today. thankfully, was not. Alex Jones technically probably killed a guy.
Andy in Kansas, you're on the air. Thanks for holding.
Hello, Alex. I'm a first-time caller. I'm a huge fan. I love your work.
I love you.